listening to Feather Mane Soul Wisdom, a podcast designed for people looking to live embodied lives and find their authentic selves. This show is hosted by Kit Kailstow, body theologian and spiritual mentor. If you're looking to get in touch with your inner spirit, then this show is for you. Thanks for listening. And now, this week's show. Hi, everybody. It's Kit here. And I just wanted to talk to you just a little bit before we get to the main event, which is my interview with author Lane Smith. Lane is the author of 78 Acts of Liberation, Tarot to Transform Our World. And not only am I super excited to have my first interview here on the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Show be Lane Smith, and we had just an amazing conversation talking about tarot and liberation and our current moment. But also, I am thrilled to use this interview to talk about or to introduce the subject of tarot. You might have noticed there's been a big gap in the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom episodes. And some of that was intentional. Life happened. I got sick. We had absolutely wild weather here in the Missouri Ozarks. I lost power a few times for several days at a time. It has been an amazing start to 2025, in good ways and in bad ways. But we're here. And one of the reasons why there was this gap is I wasn't quite comfortable with my approach to spirituality. Some of that has to do with I'm still living in academia as I finish my master's degree. My approach to spirituality is not what is primarily taught, what I'm primarily surrounded with, but also because I believe tools like tarot and Reiki and energy work can be powerful ways to create restoration with our stories. And Lane and I talk about that to some extent with the tarot archetypes, but also because I believe those tools can be helpful for regulating your nervous system, for feeling and getting into your body and being aware of your body. I use, you know, Reiki and energy work quite a bit to deal with racing thoughts and help me relax to go to sleep. I use tarot and tarot archetypes just to kind of tune in a little bit to the universe and see what I should be paying attention to. And I realized that it was okay to talk about these things, and I needed to talk about these things in part to, again, work on creating that restoration or that restoration, because much like religion, much like spirituality, people have very specific thoughts about those things. And I feel like we can have new conversations and recreate what we want around those things. So I'm very excited to introduce you to the first, but hopefully not the last interview on the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Show. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being here. Please click all the links in the show notes. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, and I look forward to chatting with you soon. Thank you. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Podcast. I am so pleased to have my very first interview on this podcast with author Lane Smith, whose book sounds absolutely fascinating, and I can't wait to dive into. Just to give you a little bit of background on our guest today, Lane has many years of experience as an activist, organizer, and tarot reader. They work in areas related to war, the death penalty, attacks on LGBT rights and body autonomy, police violence, and apartheid. So this fits right in with what we talk about with embodied and authentic living and making sure that everybody has that human dignity. They've worked in a social worker. And most importantly for our conversation today, they are the author of the fascinating book, 78 Acts of Liberation, Tarot to Transform Our World. And I just can't wait to dive in. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you. Great. I really kind of glossed over what I think is a really in-depth and important kind of biography. Is there anything that I missed or anything you want to add?
Oh gosh. Let's see. Well, I'll just say, I'm 46 years old right now. So it's about 25 years of activism experience that I've brought to the book. I'm not as street active as I was like in my 20s and 30s. I'm a single parent of two young children. So now I'm more like writing and sort of like bringing up the next generation of activists is more of like most of my time as of right now. But I did really did feel like writing this book was kind of like a culmination of like the last 20 years of my life, just kind of lessons learned and different movements and struggles that I've been involved with. I do have like a few anecdotes in the books of like times that I was arrested or this and that. It's mostly zoomed out like social historical, but there are some personal like experience details in there too.
Okay. Well, wonderful. And so I think I just want to start with two things. And the first is the word liberation, and the second is the tarot. Let's start with liberation because on my podcasts and kind of within my blogs, I have really been focused on the yogic version of liberation in moksha. And the idea of Jivanmukta, which is being liberated, not in some, not after death, but now while we're alive, being an enlightened being. And so it sounds like, if I could hazard a guess, this ties into your work as an activist, but how are you thinking of liberation in terms of the book and the tarot?
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with the traditions that you're speaking about, but the little that I do know, I think it fits well because one of my main goals with this book was to push back on hyper-individualism. And I know that there are a lot of like Buddhist perspectives about liberation that have to do with liberating your being liberated from like the self, like from what's trapping you in your idea of yourself, right? And being more expansive, not pigeonholing or stereotyping and be like, oh, I'm not the kind of person who does that when your concept of self is limiting, which I think it automatically is in a hyper individualist capitalist society that really wants to whittle you down into your productive function, right? It's like, we want you to obey and we want you to do work for us and we want you to define yourself by the work that you do, right? So like having a more expansive idea of what's possible beyond what your idea of self might be, in especially in terms of considering others, considering the community. And I guess if what you're asking is my definition of liberation, I mean, I think you can tell from the book where I have, cited lots of like Black liberationists and Black feminists and womanists. I really have learned so much from those traditions, and I really subscribe to the idea that there is no such thing as individual liberation. Like the idea that no one is free until we're all free is one that I really truly believe in. And I think we see play out all the time that people are really seeing in real time how interconnected we are. And whether it's genocide in Palestine, whether it's trans people here, even trans people, we're only 1% of the population, but grinding us down, criminalizing us has effects that ripple throughout society. You're not going to be able to be a cis person with, a cis woman walking into a bathroom with short hair, like this one Black butch lesbian woman who was stopped. Cops followed her into a bathroom to be like, "We thought you were a man." It's just like it's just gonna increase policing of everybody's gender, right? So that this is the interconnectedness that I'm talking about, where it goes beyond just like your individual circumstances, identity. It's considering the whole.
You are speaking to the choir here.
Yes. I think so. I mean, we shouldn't be talking so much. But no, I think it connects, but even though I'm not in the same necessarily like spiritual tradition, I think that there is, I think there is definitely resonance there.
It certainly sounds like it. Yeah. And there's a lot of overlap in a lot of that. One of the things that, so I'm working on my master's degree in religious studies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I have discovered was the tradition of queer liberation, disability liberation within Christianity, which like totally blew my mind open because I was like, oh, I didn't realize this existed. I mean, I knew about African-American traditional spiritual traditions.
Right.
And there seems to be a common thread of that. Like you said, you know, no one's free till we're all free. So when we look at that with the tarot, so a lot of people hear tarot and they think, oh, fortune telling. But to me, the tarot is much more an archetype and an inner journey. And so I'm curious to hear how you think of the tarot.
Yeah, I tried to keep it pretty open for people to use it in the various different ways that they use tarot. I think you can consider what I'm writing about if you use tarot for divination, prophecy, fortune telling. If you use it only for inner work, it might help you consider the way that you relate to society instead of just having it be this like, in a vacuum kind of inner work. And, you know, like there's many ways to use tarot and I really tried to keep it pretty open and just sort of say like, what if considering, you know, the language that people used in talking about what they saw in the cards, whatever their purpose in reading was, has not always been this psychological language, of course, because that's a very modern thing. And I mean, we see the language of psychology used probably most often with most modern tarot readers now. That's not always what it was. And I just thought, you know, considering that that language can adapt, why not try and see what happens if we use political language? And so whatever your purpose in reading is, the idea here is to use language that's more attuned to social concerns, not to replace what you already, you know, think of when you look at different cards, but to have more options for what might come to mind as possible meanings.
Okay. Yeah. That matches exactly kind of what I was thinking of. So not to like put you on the spot with a card, but something that came to mind was like taking a card like the Tower. So mm-hmm. This is, you know, one of the scary tarot cards. Yeah. For me, I don't find it as scary because for me, yeah, there's the tearing down of old structures, but there's also the building of something new. And so there's kind of a sense of wonder and discovery and what can we do now to make things better? So like, you know, I would think of, you know, the Tower card in this sort of circumstance to be like, okay, we need to break down old oppressive structures to build new ones that work for everybody. Am I on the right track?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely. Yes, I agree. Like, I think one of the things I say is like the tower may need to fall. I mean, you know, it may be something that you would rather have rip the Band-Aid off done in one fell swoop rather than this agonizingly slow process, right? That sometimes that is what you want. Depending on your position, right? And I was just saying, you know, so maybe you're not the person falling out of the tower. Maybe you're the lightning, you know, maybe we are the lightning. I mean, it doesn't, you can shift perspective on who and where you are and what is falling and who is affected in that way. It doesn't have to be just the one, most privileged perspective that's like, oh, I'm the owner of the tower. And so, of course, I don't want the tower to fall. It doesn't have to be that perspective, right?
Wow, that kind of blows my mind. I've never thought about what if I'm not the person falling from the tower?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, cool. I'm just like, wow, mind blown. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. sometimes books are meant to be read straight through. Sometimes you can pick and choose. Since the tarot is kind of, at least the major arcana is very sequential, how would you like a reader to approach this book?
I'm really big on not telling people what to do. I've heard people read it, you know, I've heard people say they just read a chapter like as they would any other, like, you know, guidebook, where it's just like, if the card comes up in their reading, then they go look at that chapter. I've heard people, you know, say, I'm going to focus on, like the nines right now, because we're in a, like a hermit year. So like, I want to just like really dig into the nines right now, or beginning to end, you know. I think there's in like any variety of different ways that you could read it. I hope that people won't skip the like introductory, like historical stuff, because it is stuff that I know people have not heard. It's not just like a rehash of that same old history of tarot that you've always heard. It really is a critical history with new information in it. So I hope that people won't skip it. But I mean, I think there's a risk of skipping it if you're just like, well, let me just read card by card. But I'm really proud of that chapter. And I think, you know, it just fits in with my perspective that part of having a social conscious perspective is to tell the truth about history. And I just constantly hear people saying the same old, like, Eurocentric story about how tarot was developed that leaves out so much, and some of which is like actually disproven since they first heard that story, like in the past few years, like this deck, mass produced deck that has been found in like 14th century Italy, where the story that we're always told is it was never mass produced until the 18th century in France. And that is simply not true. It's like, there is now proof that that is not true. So that means that tarot, you know, at whatever people were using it for playing cards or divination, we may not know, but we do know that people were arrested for using playing cards for divination during the Inquisition. And now we know that tarot archetypal cards were among those playing cards. So, you know, this lie that tarot was never in the hands of common people until the 18th century is just simply, it's not true. So I hope that people will read that chapter, because I just, that's just something that particularly irks me about, like, people tell the same stories from history, and we get stuck. I don't mean just with tarot. I mean, with any and all history, Black history, with LGBT history or whatever. It's like people have one narrative that they think is the story, and other people's perspectives and the actual truth sometimes gets completely elided for the favorable story. So that's part of, I think, just think truth telling about history. Is so important if you're going to have a social justice perspective at all.
Oh, very much so. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because yeah, I mean, I admit it's been many years since I've done any sort of research or academic work on the tarot, but yeah, the story I always thought was, you know, very Eurocentric, very, very much rooted in the Western esoteric traditions.
Right.
And I'm feeling like that's not the case.
Well, you know, you can read the chapter, but yeah, it's like, okay, you know, there's this desire to separate tarot playing cards from regular playing cards, which came from the Arab world. And it's just like, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, that's a different lineage, because tarot's special because it was used for divination. And it's just like, well, let's put it in the tradition of divination. Europeans were not the first to invent divination either. So it's like, do you want to talk about the lineage of divination from like dice to sticks to, you know, through Eastern traditions? Or do you want to talk about like the tradition of making cards for whatever use they're used for, whether it's playing cards or divination or both? Like, Europeans didn't invent either of those things. So you want to like isolate tarot as the specifically special, elevated above these other traditions, just because it's European and it doesn't make any sense to you.
Yeah, and when you think about it, there has always been a very long history of cartomancy. And yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense to hear, I can't wait to dive in because it totally makes sense.
Mentioned, like, we have living Roma people who have an oral history of their own heritage. That's like, we were divining with cards forever, and people are just like, well, we just don't believe you. So it's like, oh yeah, you used them, but you couldn't have like this special knowledge or invent them or anything. It's just like you're doing whatever low class fortune telling, and we're not talking about that. But it's just like, okay, where did these Europeans learn this practice from, do you think? So there's a lot in there. I mean, I tried to keep it like fairly light and readable. It's not like a chunky book. It's a not a terribly long chapter, but I packed a lot in there that I think will be pretty eye-opening for folks. Yeah, and if people are interested in more knowing more about the Roma perspective, one of the people that I quoted in there for a Roma perspective has her own book out now. Jasmina von Thiele has Secrets of Romani Fortune Telling is her own book out now, which came out after mine. And I quoted her from an interview in my book, but now she has her own book, which you can actually like get into that perspective even further. So that's cool.
That's very cool. That's very cool. I'll have to remember to put that in the show notes
Yeah, yeah.
so people can link to that. So I want to kind of shift gears just slightly because something you said there kind of resonated, and that is believing people's lived experience. So I just wrote a blog. I've been doing some thinking about spirituality and lived experience. And we are so quick to dismiss people's lived experiences, regardless of their spiritual traditions, where if you have something like, somebody close to you says, I don't feel well, you believe that and you try to, lay down, have a cup of soup, what you try to support that. And so I feel like as part of that liberation, one good way that we can start to liberate ourselves is simply when somebody tells us about their lived experience, believe them.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I think I have a little bit of that in the High Priestess section, where the High Priestess is sort of, I consider that to be like, I don't know how I know, I just know, and it doesn't like knowing when it like an explanation or proof is not needed, right? It's just like, yeah, it's an internal self-trust sense. And yeah, I think a lot of people who don't believe others' lived experience probably have self-trust issues too. It's like they must probably don't believe what their body is telling them, or don't believe, you know what I mean? It's just like, I think it's connected.
And I also think it's a gateway to realizing thing. My words are jumbling in my head. Realizing your white privilege and realizing that how you've been told other communities, other people live may not be the truth. Because I know that was my own personal experience. I grew up very small town, Midwest, did not meet or work with another person of color until I became an adult. And it was like, when you start believing people, you're like, oh, wow, that's not my experience. But also, that's a valid experience too.
Yeah, and that's why I have unlearning as the three of cups, or is it, oh no, three of swords, I mean. I was like, three of hearts, three of hearts. It's a heart, no, it's a heart with the three swords in it, the three swords, because it's like you have to like hear those other perspectives, which may be painful, and actually let it break your heart, right? Like to actually like take it in enough to be like, oh, I was lied to, and break that open, not to just be like, oh well, yeah, that's another perspective, okay, that's how you see it, okay. I'm talking about taking it into the point where you're like, oh, I was lied to, right? And let it break your heart, truly.
Yeah, and the liberation part of that too, I think which sounds weird to say that it's liberating to have your heart broken, but it is, because again, it's that tower moment. You smash things open, and then that lets in light and lets in things for things to bloom and grow.
Right, because how fragile, how like much do you have to cling to like hold on to a lie to like have that lie still be true, right? And we see people in that space all the time where it's just like, I can't deal with letting go of what I thought was true. And so they're fragile and afraid at any challenge at all, constantly. And it's, I mean, that's got to be a terrible, fearful, anxious way to live and not free at all.
No, not at all. So I don't want to give too much away on the book, because I want people to read and explore it for themselves. So let's talk a little bit more about your other venture, which is the tarot and politics zine.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like super excited when I heard that there was a zine that actually combined those two. And so let's just talk a little bit about it. Again, the information's on your website, which is going to be in the show notes. But there is looks like it's a zine that covers, all sorts of things.
Yeah, I really, so I started it in what, 2021? And really I just saw it as, I didn't have like a theme to it. It was more like, oh, there are people who are really having important discussions, bringing up important information. That year, Maria Menounos, with her anti-racism with the tarot blog was huge, and I was like, I don't want to see this stuff just like disappear into the social media and blogs and what, like, I was like, I really want to preserve these amazing, incredible ideas. So I just thought, like, well, how can I do this just in like the small way that I can? I'm not a publisher, right? But like, let me just bring together some of these outstanding voices, just of that year, right? It was just like, who are the outstanding voices, like, that are not like the mainstream voices who are in tarot and talking about social political issues using tarot. So pretty kind of narrow criteria, is not a ton of people. I think that first issue might have only had like six maybe people. I forget now, but and so yeah, I just did that year, and then I did it again the next year. And it really, like, yeah, no particular theme, just like who is doing this work, and to provide like a paid venue. So people could get paid for their amazing, like, thinking about tarot and divination, and not just through like selling readings, but to just really like honor the work that they were doing. I wanted to have a paid venue for that. So yeah, I did. Yeah, so I did an issue in 2021 and 2022. 2023, I was just writing my book. Like, I just didn't have the capacity. Then I still, like, I've been slowly, it's just been so hard with the world and everything. I do have a third and probably final issue that is going to come out. I don't know exactly when it's going to come out. Everybody involved in it are like marginalized people, trans people, Palestinians, people, who are really struggling and suffering right now. So it's like, I haven't had like hard deadlines. I've just been like, this will come out when it's ready to come out, to give everybody plenty of space of what they need. So I can't tell you exactly when that third and final issue will be out, but I'm excited about who all's in it. And yeah, I'll have that to say. I guess I'll just say, like, I'm not on Instagram now. I deactivated my account. I might reactivate it just for the Tarot and Politics zine, because that's what that page was originally created for, and I felt like it wasn't fair to the contributors for this third issue to just like delete my platform before their issue even came out. So I might temporarily be back on Instagram to like release that thing, and then completely delete my Instagram. But Definitely on Blue Sky. I'm on Blue Sky all the time. So like if people, I'll definitely announce it there too. And whenever it comes out, it'll be on my website too. So I don't have a date to tell you right now, but this year there will be a third issue for that.
That's great. And I have to say that is awesome that you're letting everybody have the space that they need, because I've even noticed that in college. The professors, I think this semester, are realizing that a lot of us are just overwhelmed
Yeah.
and having the space that they need.
Right. Just to absorb the news every week is so just, I mean, for some people, debilitating, really, just to have to like be bombarded with this. That re it's like, oh, is my Medicaid going to be cut off? I don't know. Like, is it a rumor? Is it true? Like, just constant bombardment. It's just, yeah, it's awful.
It is definitely. I do want to put in a plug for Blue Sky. I am also on Blue Sky,
Yeah.
and probably very soon Feather Main Soul will also have its own Blue Sky account.
Cool.
If you want to kind of, my profile can probably be a lot because I do a lot, but if you want to just get Feather Main Soul wisdom, that will be there as well. I guess before we go, I just kind of want to wrap this up by saying, is there anything that I didn't ask about the book that you want to add, or anything that I didn't ask about that you'd like to add?
Oh, okay. I was just when we were first talking, I was thinking of the Hierophant card, just because you're talking about your religious studies and everything. And I just, yeah, I really tried to, even though it certainly is like a left progressive perspective, like we were talking about Christianity. So that's why I have that chapter about the Hierophant in there that highlights the sanctuary movement. Where it's just like, yes, like I'm not a blame religion broadly kind of person, which I think some people may anticipate that I could be. And I don't know, like I'm not. So it's just sort of like, if you're going to be a historical materialist about, the role that religion has played, you have to acknowledge that there have been progressive threads and places where they have done good. And so that is also included in the book too. It's not a bash organized religion book. It's not a Christianity is great book either, but I mean, there are examples here and there from all kinds of different movements, from all kinds of different backgrounds, including, Iranian women fighting for the right to wear the hijab. I mean, there's just like, it's very, I would say, inclusive of many different perspectives as far as like the history of religion goes. So it's not a, if you're coming from a particular tradition, you don't have to like steel yourself that this is gonna, there's gonna be some like anti-religion diatribe in there. There's not.
Well, and I think that's part of what we talked about earlier too, about being allowed to let go of some of those feelings and let go of some of those things that you think about, because I had to do that personally when it came to religion. I had very specific views about very specific things. And I was like, my religious studies, I am not going to touch organized religion. I'm focusing on, yoga philosophy. I'm focusing on religion and culture kind of more generally. And then I got introduced to some concepts and went, wait a minute, I didn't know this existed. And it's, the world is never as simple and as organized as we think it is.
Right. You can't judge a culture by the stereotypes that you've heard about it. And it's like, be more specific in identifying the things that you don't like. Is it Christianity or is it hierarchy? Is it, patriarchy? And it's like, do those things have to go hand in hand? Some places they do, some places maybe not, So, yeah.
So I did think of one final question that I think would be good to leave our listeners with, and that is, as we discussed, the world is a lot right now. What advice
or what one thing would you suggest somebody who is newly stepping into kind of the space? What advice would you give, or what action would you suggest that they take without telling people what to do?
Not what you tell people what to do. You know, I think it's going to take so many different actions and so many different people, and it's not one easy answer or even one hard answer. It's not one answer. And I think what's cool about bringing politics together with tarot is that it lets you be guided, not by whoever has the loudest voice, not whoever is like, I don't know, the celebrity leftist in your circles or whatever. It's like, what happens if I allow myself to receive spiritual messages about what to do politically? That's really the aim of the book, is to like develop your own self-trust to be like, where am I gonna fit in and what should I do? It's not for me to tell you. It's not for political leaders to tell you. It's not for your bestie to tell you. It's not to be like, oh, I'm going to listen to this demographic like they're a monolith. It's take in, learn all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, you're responsible for your own decisions. And whether you think that's coming from within you or whether that's a spiritually guided message, I think tarot can help you decide that.
Well, wonderful. And that is the perfect ending, I think, for this episode. It has been sheer joy talking to you today, Lane.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
And your website is mxlanesmith.com. It will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here. I so appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kailstow. Learn more about Feather Mane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. Kit's passionate about embodied living and finding authentic joy by connecting with yourself and others. Kit loves working with neurodivergent, chronically ill, or disabled individuals, as well as anyone who wants to reclaim the stories and find new stories for them. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting the podcast website and following the links to Muse Charmer. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow the podcast at your favorite podcast listening or social media site. Thank you.